And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Austin Fitz with us in studio. We are going to take calls with her in just a moment here on coasttocoastam.com. Lex has posted the link, the live link to Julian Assange's message, whatever that message may be, which will be in about 52 minutes. You can get to it by going to coasttocoastam.com. Click the link. You'll see it right there in our carousel, and you'll be ready in about 52 minutes to hear what the world is waiting to hear, whatever it may be. So that's all set. Go to coasttocoastam.com and just keep that ready for you, and we're going to monitor that as well. We're going to come back in a moment with Catherine Austin Fitz and take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We'll get your calls in a second. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com is her website, of course. Catherine, you know, you are pretty optimistic about a lot of things, but do you sense that something could go wrong here with the economy?
Oh, there are many things. Yeah. You know, I think the word of the day is uncertainty. If you just, for example, if you look at the economy, so I'll just pick on the stock market, we have to be prepared for another 2008 down 50% or a crash up 30%. So the variability of scenarios that are possible are so extraordinary, George. That's what's very unnerving, because most people in most activities don't like that level of risk.
Right.
And so the risk management is kind of out of control, and that is a very draining thing for most everybody in institutions as well.
Boy, if it drops 50%, the stock market, sure would be nice to have some cash on hand to get ready to go back in, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Here's the thing, though, with like even the market, you never know where the bottom is, do you?
Well, here's the thing. I keep coming back to this example because it's something I've talked a lot about. About 4 or 5 weeks ago, we woke up one morning and the private prison stocks were down 48%.
Prisons. Right, These are private prison companies.
And why were they down? They were down because if you look at their fundamental economics, they weren't productive. In other words, government can do the function better, cheaper. And if you look at the policies, we have way too many people in prison. Those people could be doing something else more productive.
Right.
If you look at how much the taxpayers cost.
A lot of them. Petty marijuana offenses,
right.
things like that.
So you have nonviolent people who are better off doing community service or working and paying taxes, whatever. So it's a highly unproductive thing. And now with the debt growth finance or the debt finance growth model over, we need to get back to fundamental productivity. And so that's a squeeze that's coming throughout the economy and society. And so that's the uncertainty. You need to get back to fundamental productivity, and any economic activity or company or institution that's not productive is going to get changed one way or the other.
What are we going to do with this whack job in North Korea?
Oh, he's
he's a whack job.
Right. It depends really on what the Chinese and the Russians want.
Whether they can contain
right.
him or not.
I mean, part of the problem with the Chinese,
I don't think he listens to anybody.
Well, here's the thing. The Chinese, in one sense, control. At the same time, they don't want North Koreans flooding. You know, they don't want to have to feed millions of North Koreans.
Right.
So, you know, the guy's a problem.
And don't fall asleep in one of his meetings. You're gone.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the proliferation of nuclear weapons and very powerful weapons is one of the issues of the next 20 years.
Well, and you've got this guy sending out videos of what it would be like to blow up New York and Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. He's got these videos out there. I mean, that's pretty dangerous.
I've never seen them, but
they're there.
They're there. It's going to come down to what the Chinese and the Russians want.
Israel is very quiet these days.
It's hard to imagine Israel being quiet.
They're quiet. This is Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
They're very quiet. And the Iranians, they seem to be very quiet. There's something
going
on.
Well, the politics of the Middle East are dangerous right now. It's dangerous.
Yeah, it is. It's a tinderbox. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Kevin to get things started. First-time caller from Arkansas. Hey, Kev, go ahead.
It's a real honor to speak to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Just want to say that. And I am calling from Arkansas. And two real quick things. The first one's a question. Those of us who have a little bit of money in the bank, What would you recommend that we do, you know, with the money we have in the bank? We've heard things like, oh, you know, the next time there's a crash, they're going to take, you know, so much from depositors and things like that. That's my first question. And the second thing is, being that I'm from Arkansas, down here in Razorback country, we're all pretty terrified of the possibility of Ms. Clinton getting in. And I'm dead serious about this.
Right.
There were several people that were enemies of the Clintons that disappeared down here. And people learn, you know, to keep their mouths shut. They learn to be very scared. And that's how, you know, the majority of us feel down here, like I would say 70%, if not more. So I just wanted to say that, and I want to thank you both for what you do.
Okay, and so the money in the bank. Have you got money in the bank?
Well,
what do you do?
The thing to worry about is the bail-ins. But if you're in a financially sound bank, I would not be worried about bail-ins. So I think you want to be with a bank that has a fundamentally sound business. It's not.
Are there any?
Yes, absolutely. I'm in one of the smallest community banks in the world, and you know something? They are sound. The economy, Shemitah could happen, and I'll bet you, George, that they would turtle right through.
That's good.
Look at
Wells Fargo, for example. Well, look what they just did.
Well, but I'm talking about a bank that has very strong and ethical relationships with the community for several generations now.
Yeah.
It's been run by three Quaker ladies, three generations of Quaker ladies, and it's
amazing.
You know, but there are a tremendous number of very sound community banks or credit unions. They have very strong fundamental businesses in the community, and they have FDIC insurance. There is no reason for the federal government not to keep printing money to support FDIC. I can't fathom why they, you know, they would, unless they purposely wanted to destroy the economy. So I think the chances of that are very small.
So you would move your money into a small community bank.
Well, but I would, and we did a wrap-up called Where to Stash Your Cash in 2016. You can find it at Solari.com. I think you want to make sure all of your relationships, not just your financial relationships, but all of your relationships are with highly ethical, productive people or institutions.
Sure.
When it comes to custodians, whether it's banks, security firms, anything, you want to be with people who have a good, productive, sound business and have great governance and management.
Well, how do you know that? I would have thought Wells Fargo was one of them.
If you go to or do a search for Solari.com and how to find a good local bank.
All right.
It's our Bank Intimate page. Do a search for Solari.com and Bank Intimate.
From all over the place?
We walk you through the steps of how you identify and find a good local bank. Anybody can do it.
Okay. Let's go next to Charles in O'Fallon, Missouri. That's near St. Louis. Hi, Charles. Go ahead.
How are you doing this evening?
I am fine. Thank you. I hope you are too.
Absolutely. I had a question for Catherine Austin Fitz. It's one that I haven't seen politically mentioned a lot, but it's in regards towards energy independence. And it's one that I think your audience needs to look up because the information is public. We have a shale oil field in Colorado that is on government land, is currently largely closed, that has upwards of 3 trillion barrels of oil locked up in it, according to the USGS. In today's dollars, that's between $120 and $150 trillion. Now, obviously, it's not going to all come out at one time
right,
or anything like that.
Right.
But over the long term, do you think that that would have a positive impact on the U.S. economy? Or do you think possibly it may overly flood that particular market to the point where there is no positive economic impact? Canada, for instance, also has a monster oil field. They are exploiting it. And it's about 2 to 2.5 trillion barrels. It's up in Fort McMurray. But, you know, we've got our own monster here. We're just not taking advantage of it yet.
Right. I would say the word is probably yet. I think that having those kinds of assets in reserve is very positive in support of the U.S. dollar as reserve currency and very supportive of the U.S. economy. The number one cost of corporations, particularly manufacturing, is energy. It's not labor, it's energy. So you bring the energy price down, and it's a tremendous support to both any operating company or institution, and real estate is an asset. So it's a tremendous asset. Yes, if you bring it out too much too fast, the creative destruction can be extraordinary. And part of the politics we're dealing with in the Middle East is what's now happening as you bring the price of oil down. That's having a devastating impact on revenues in the oil-producing countries in the Middle East as well as Russia. So it definitely changes geopolitics, but it's another ace card behind the United States. And energy self-sufficiency since 2005 has done tremendous things to keep our economy sort of turtling along.
So when a new president comes into office in January, what are they going to face economically, in your opinion?
Well, the number one problem they're going to face is the U.S. budget needs to be reengineered. And you've got three groups. You've got the creditors, you've got the military, and you've got retirees. And it's like a pig moving through the stakes. So that's one issue you're going to face. The second issue you're going to face is you have pension funds and insurance companies that provide support to retirees in a variety of ways, who are really being squeezed by the low interest rates over the last 5 years.
Yeah, returns.
And the financial coup, some of the 2008 was hard on there. And so their model is not working. And so how are you going to handle the baby boomers in the G7 countries? Because the pension fund and the insurance companies are going to struggle. And one of the places that's going to pop out is in state and local government. If you look at state and local pension funds, the pension funds are not fully funded, but it's not as bad as is often claimed. The health care obligations are a big problem, George. And because you've done a lot of coverage, great coverage on health on Coast to Coast. We have got to change how we eat, how we live.
Yes, we do.
Lowering the health care costs is a matter of reinventing how we live, which flies right in the face of many different corporate models, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry or the food industry. We're talking about radical reengineering if we're going to fix whether it's the federal budget or the pension fund problem.
Something else new is happening around the country, Catherine, and that is loans from hedge funds to smaller businesses, because banks don't touch them. High interest rates.
Right.
But there's a lot of cash available out there. It's unbelievable.
Yes, of course. We've been printing. Printing. Yeah.
They need to move it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they're doing. Let's go to our friend Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you very much, George. And good morning to you, Ms. Fitz.
Hi, Wayne.
Yes, I want to ask you if you're aware of the former ambassador for Ronald Reagan, Lee Wanter. Are you aware of him?
Yes, I don't know a lot. I've read an occasional piece by him or about him, but I'm not very knowledgeable.
He was on our show some time ago.
Oh, he was?
He's talked about how lots of money has disappeared. Go ahead, Wayne.
Right. He was saying that he had accumulated somewhere approximately around $31.2 trillion, which was confiscated from him by the Fed. What I want to know is, if that is actually true, is there a legal means of him getting that money back? Because he says that Ronald Reagan himself wanted that money to be reinvested into the American people. And also, a question I want to ask you, what you think about this. Ms. Fitz, it's my contention that since 1913, the United States has not actually been a democracy, because I don't think that you can have private banks controlling the fiscal policy and the money supply of a country and call that country a democracy. So I would like to know what you think about what I just said, and what do you think about if Lee Wanter can get his money back? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right. So I agree with you. If the Treasury of the United States does not control the currency, but instead it's controlled by a group of private banks who also control as depository the U.S. federal accounts, and you're missing $21 trillion from those accounts, it's hard to call that a democracy. It's also hard to call it a democracy when you don't get annual financial statements for your congressional district and your community. So, because if you're going to vote in a representative democracy, you need to know how the money works in your place.
So we don't do audits? federal audits?
Actually, George, I was part of a group of people who got audited financial statements legislated as a requirement, and the requirement went into effect in 1995, which is why we started to get financial statements saying they weren't going to give us audited financial statements, and we had undocumentable adjustments in the trillions of dollars.
Jeez.
So, on Leo Wanta, the material I've read doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't fit with my experience of how the world works, and so I've never been comfortable with the material, so I can't answer it. But I have to say I don't know. But it never made any sense to me. What I would say is whether it's the IT contractors or the banks, there are records of where the $21 trillion went, just like there are records of where the $27 trillion of bailouts went. And, we have a right to get those records and find out where that money went.
I'm just amazed how they move it and they don't know where it is.
They know where it is. George.
Somebody knows where it is, right?
There are digital records. You have digital records. If the NSA can know what I eat for breakfast, surely they can find $21 trillion that disappeared through digital accounts.
Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program, Joe. Go ahead.
How you doing, Joy?
Good.
I'd like to ask Catherine now. We've had Brexit already. Do you think that there's a Brexit-like decision in the future of the United States? And do you think that the United States will kind of want to separate itself from the vast global economy and become more independent, more U.S.-centric?
Great question. I think the answer is yes. Part of what you're seeing in the campaign is a Brexit kind of reaction. And it's really this: centralization has been very destructive. It shrunk the pie. I think the general population understands this, and this is their pushback to say, yes, you're making certain kinds of things look much more productive, but it's at the cost of destruction of life, the environment, many other things. So that's part of it. I think the other thing is that we move to a multipolar world. The U.S. has interacted with the world in a unipolar model, sort of as the empire. As we move to a multipolar world, it's very tempting to pull back behind the oceans and try and have a more orderly society here, because we're going to go through a period of great change globally, and it's going to be very, I would say, very organic.
Indeed, indeed. Catherine, we're going to take a break pretty soon and come back with final calls. But you have conferences coming up, events coming up.
Uh-huh.
How about for people who want to go see you or meet you?
Okay, so we have a lunch with Catherine for subscribers in Dallas next Sunday. It's a Sunday brunch. Yeah, just come to Soleri.com. You can learn all about it. And then I'm really looking forward to Tulsa, October 15th, 7 to 11 at the Irish Pub in Tulsa. We are having the launch party for the Joseph P. Farrell Pipe Organ Crowd Fund.
Oh, really?
A group of Joseph's friends are getting together. You know Dr. Farrell, he's been on Coast to Coast many times.
Good guest.
Believe it or not, he started at the age of 6 to play an organ. And so we've decided that Joseph should get his very own pipe organ. And so we're gathering together to do a crowdfund, and we're converging from four directions on Tulsa. You can buy tickets at Soleri.com. Come in. We'd love to see you. Joseph and I will both be there drinking way too much wine, answering too many questions.
Just don't drive, Catherine. That's all.
I won't.
We need you around for a long, long time.
I won't.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment with Catherine Austin Fitz, and we are going to take some final phone calls. I may hold her over to get her reaction to Julian Assange, who's supposed to say something via video through Berlin in about 31 minutes. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and we're waiting less than 30 minutes now for Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, to make his announcement about who knows what. But we will find out. Aren't you anxious about this, Catherine?
I'm very eager to see what it is.
I'm not even going to ask you to speculate, because I'm not going to speculate. I want to see what he has to say. But I'm amazed. I would guess that somebody there with WikiLeaks leaks something out for them to talk about it, don't you?
I don't think so, because when you're dealing with serious physical security issues, you run it very tight.
His attorney died, right?
My understanding is, it was
strange circumstances.
I think very strange.
Yeah.
Right after his legal situation changed, and so he needed his attorney.
Gone. Yeah, that's strange. Let's take some more calls. Final calls. Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hello, Cornelius.
Hello, George and Catherine. God bless you and yours. It's been a little while, Catherine, since we talked, because I know you've been on since the R. Bell days.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I was telling Tommy, my question for you is, with this coming collapse, I know y'all talked about that gold and silver, but I tell everybody I'm the Bible bullets and beans man, the God guns and gold man. And I just believe that we need to get a lot more food and water for this coming collapse. So I'll just take my answer off there and see how you feel about it. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Well, I'm not convinced the collapse has to happen, but I will tell you the most important thing, I think, to growing our economy is to rebuild our local food systems. Fresh food, critical if we're going to solve the healthcare issues. So anything you can do to rebuild your local food systems and get fresh, wonderful, healthy food is excellent.
Well, you know, Catherine, we have talked about storable items, but you really don't know how long it's going to last.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
2 weeks, a month, you know. I've always said if the grid goes down, we're all up a creek.
Right, unless you have enough orchards.
Lots of them. And then your neighbors will take them.
Right.
You know, that's the other
problem. Well, that's why I always say, the other thing I said in a great comic, Cornelius, I always say, always have enough gold to bribe the border guards.
John, truck driving in Oklahoma. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing there?
Good, friend? Johnny, good.
Hey, man, good to see you, and you always raised the bar higher than the last time. Catherine, you're one and only, and you can't clone you. But listen, there's a problem there arising with this. We had a problem in Muskogee, Oklahoma, where there was a young man last year was stopped by the local police, and he has never been in trouble or anything. They took him downtown and fingerprinted him, said he wasn't in the system. So that comes back to that Social Security chip thing, and I was concerned how would they implement that as far as the local, you know, authorities being able to have everybody line up, or how would that, in your view, how would they be able to do that, and how would we be able to fight against that?
I think they're going to start it with babies, as you talked
about.
Yeah,
I think they're going to start it with kids and try and persuade parents that it's a safety issue. You'll see, I was out at a state fair a couple of years ago, and they had a booth, and somebody was trying to persuade you to chip your child so your child could be safe. So I think they're gonna start with the kids.
Catherine Albrecht has said that pets, dogs specifically, who get chipped, are developing little tumors by the site.
Yeah, she's done great work on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're more than an economist and an investment advisor. You're into this stuff we talk about all the time, aren't you?
Well, but George, here's, being an investment advisor, you back into this. What I discovered was the number one risk to my subscribers' financial health is health problems.
Yeah.
So you can't talk about, money is just part of a whole person, and you can't, in a period of radical change, you've got to talk about what their skills are, what their knowledge is, what their health is. And you know, I was just watching a presentation by one of the mothers who was portrayed in Vaxxed, and she was saying that if your child is severely autistic, present value, that's going to cost you and your family $5 million for that lifetime. Now, that's enough to wipe out any family.
Sure is.
So you really need to be concerned with, you know, the whole system of you and your family, and all these issues are very, very important. There's not enough money in the world to buy you out of all the risks in the economy right now.
What do you think of the veto override on President Obama on the 9/11 Saudi?
Boy, I don't think Congress understood what they were doing.
You think that was bad?
Well, I think it's going to open up. We just said, I haven't had a chance to look at the lawsuit, but somebody apparently just filed
today. A woman did against the Saudis.
No, but the Iraqis have filed a lawsuit against the United States in U.S. courts now, asking to be, you know, for recompense for the Iraqi war. So this
reparations.
Really, So this could really open up a whole, and the other thing is, if you look at what could come out on 9/11, you're talking about a lot of information coming out that I think many of the people voted don't necessarily want to see come out. So it wouldn't surprise me to see tremendous pressure on Congress to reverse this.
All right, next up, we go to Roger in Orlando, Florida. Hello, Raj, go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Roger.
I just wanted to say that I recently cashed in my mutual fund with a big bank because I'm concerned about the bubble that I keep hearing about. And I've got some money to invest, so I'll probably follow Catherine's advice and try to find a local community bank, something that's trustworthy. But I have an interesting big picture global theory of global economics. I actually feel that behind the scenes, there is a movement to equalization of national wealth, the people around the world, as opportunities spread to other countries, third world countries, and the people's wealth begun to start to get equalized. Naturally, opportunity is taken away from first world countries like America. And so we're seeing this backlash right now with the populist backlash because naturally, if you're going to take manufacturing and give opportunities to third world countries, you're going to see a little bit of a depression in wealth in first world countries. But I believe the bigger picture behind it is a movement towards something like a Star Trek Federation for the world, where all peoples will suddenly just get shifted into like a federal single world wealth system, where people will be entitled to, you know, just as being human beings, they will be entitled to all necessary bodily care, and then a shifting of the human race towards creativity and, you know, recognition of all the value in human beings beyond just monetization of right now we're in a primitive system of monetization of all human skills and faculties, and it's just it's dehumanizing to the human spirit. You know, we are ready to get into the next generation of letting economics serve the general welfare in general and opening up the human race to great creativity and to take a stand of noble humanity.
Roger, I got to tell you, in a perfect world, that's absolutely the best thing to happen. But Catherine, this isn't a perfect world.
Well, several things. So I think one of Roger's comments that was very appropriate is there has been created by globalization has created a lot of opportunities for people in the emerging markets. I think that's true. It's a mixed bag. Some people have been harmed, but we see the middle class growing globally. However, it's important to understand, George, very interesting latest statistic. Convergence of per capita incomes is only happening in Asia. So Asia is converging with the G7 developed nations, but the emerging markets are not. They're being left behind. There's huge gapping in terms that it gets back to this productivity issue. I agree with Roger that the current system is very primitive, but I hate to say, a lot of the backlash, I think, in America, you know, they say it's against globalization, but I don't think it is. I think it's against centralization that is very destructive of fundamental humanity and fundamental productivity. And you're seeing the general population intuitively understand that a lot of centralization is occurring, but it's not fundamentally economic at all.
Not at all. So what did we do to fix it? Anything?
Well, I think the first thing we do is we bring transparency, George, which is why I'm such a Coast to Coast fan.
Yes, you are.
I am.
We're fans of yours.
You dragged me into space kicking and screaming. I said, why is everybody so interested in what's going on in the sky? And you dragged me up into the sky to look around, and I was, you know, I'm driving around with my night goggle vision, you know, my night vision.
And by the way, in our teleportation of you, you were missing a shoe. I don't know where you lost it, but... David in Florence, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. It's always wonderful when you have Catherine on. She is probably my favorite guest.
Well, how about that?
Oh, wow. Super. Thanks, David.
I want to talk about an aspect of the American economy that has been really dragging this country down. They call this the Great Recession, but based on my past 57 years experience as a victim of two federal agencies, the Forest Service and the Interior Department, I discovered that the middle class has been under attack by those agencies. They have wiped out thousands of small miners, small ranchers, probably small farmers. They've done immeasurable damage to small communities. We had millions of tons of flagstone in northern Arizona. That property that they stole by fraud and lies should now be employing no less than 20, possibly 50 people if we had a healthy economy. But
right.
We don't have a healthy economy because the country is out of balance. And these two agencies, you may not believe what I'm saying, but I have 57 years of experience to know they have been very busy unbalancing this country. When systems and countries and societies become unbalanced, they begin to fail. And the more they fail, the more unbalanced they become. This country right now is in the process of going down, and it's even going backward. There's only one candidate that says he wants to make America great again. If we elect more of the same thing, we're just going to continue to go downhill. I could talk now for 2 hours on what they
Well, we're not going to have that kind of time there, Davey.
Let me just say, David, I spend a lot of time driving around the country. I live in a rural area in Tennessee. I lived for a year in Montana in 2005. I know everything you're saying is absolutely true.
You live in an RV, don't you?
No, I do not live in an RV. But I travel all over the country, and I hear what you're saying from so many different wonderful, competent, ethical people. So I know absolutely of what you speak. The small everything is being wiped out in this country in a way that's not economic, and it's part of centralizing wealth in a way which is both uses illegal or corrupt methods and is destroying the economy.
We're in a society where, for example, let's use the police situation lately.
Right.
And we are huge supporters of police officers.
Me too.
It is unfortunate that in some cases we do have aggressive police shootings.
Right.
But in most cases, they're justified. A very sad story where an individual pointed one of those little smoking devices that looked like a handgun.
Right.
But you don't stand there pointing it at police like it's a handgun.
Right.
You just don't do that.
Right.
And they were 15 feet away from the guy. They shot him. They had to. They had no choice. Now, one could argue, well, shoot the guy in the leg. Look, when somebody's pointing a gun at you, you are trained to shoot for body mass.
Right.
And you do that.
Right.
But people are uptight. People are on the edge of exploding. And if this presidential election doesn't go the right way, and it doesn't appear to be, we could have a problem in this country.
Right. If it looks fixed, if it looks rigged, I think you'll see. But here's the problem. The disapproval rating on both candidates is so high, George.
Yeah.
That no matter which way it goes or no matter how it goes, you're going to have
half of the public in the constituency upset. Either one. 49% to 46, it's 50-50 as far as I'm concerned. You're going to have half the nation upset with whoever gets elected.
Right.
And that's not good.
Right. But even if you look at the people who are voting for a particular candidate, what I hear from our audience and our subscribers is they're not excited about the person they're going to vote for. So it's not just 50% mad. It's another 50% who are not going to be very happy.
No, they're not. We are about 6 minutes away from apparently Julian Assange releasing a video statement in Berlin, though he's still in Ecuador. He's still in the embassy.
No, he's in London in the Ecuadorian embassy.
In London in the Ecuador. Yeah. But he's in that embassy, and he's been in there a long time, hasn't he?
Yes, 4 years, 5 years. It's quite a while.
Doesn't he, walk around?
He has to walk around inside the building.
He's put himself in prison, basically.
Yeah.
Who's after him?
I think the United States.
Is he in there because of legal purposes?
Well, there was a legal case brought in Sweden, so the jurisdiction and the exact legal squabble is in Sweden. But I think the only reason it's happening is the Americans are insisting on it.
Is it civil or criminal? I mean, I think it's
politics.
I mean, if it's civil, he doesn't have to hide.
Well, it was
not like an Edward Snowden situation, is it?
No, it was. I think the accusation was rape. So
on
it was
him.
A sexual.
I remember that.
It was a sexual assault
that.
Charge.
Well, and whatever he releases, if he releases anything, is going to be questioned and suspect too, right? There's going to be denials all the way up and down.
I would say at this point, WikiLeaks' credibility is very high.
I would agree with that.
Right.
But still, if he releases something on either candidate, if that's what it is, you're going to get denials. Nobody's going to admit it.
Here's the thing, George. I have never seen support for the establishment and for the media, the corporate media, as low as it is today.
I know that.
And so
I
think
huge.
The court of popular opinion is going to assume that WikiLeaks has integrity in terms of quality of information and that the denials don't.
Well, I tell you what we're going to do. Vernon Mahabal, our special guest, is up next. We're going to be talking about the secret code on your hands. He's going to talk about palm reading and the presidential campaign and whose hands are going to tell him who's going to win and things like that.
Oh, fascinating.
But what I want you to do, Catherine, if you will, before we teleport you back to wherever you came from, is to hang around with me to see if Julian Assange does come out.
I would love to.
We have a link at coasttocoastam.com, folks, if you want to watch the live statement. If it comes, it's all set up for that. We're going to be monitoring it as well. And if he does come up, let's get your reaction to that. And then we'll go to Vernon a bit later on in the program. We'll be back.